So I want to begin my homily today with the very first sentence that you heard in today's second reading, Paul writing to the Corinthians. And even though you may have heard this once, I want to read this slowly because I'm going to focus on something from that statement for reflection today. Paul says, "As you excel in every respect, faith, discourse, knowledge, all earnestness, and in the love we have for you, may you excel in this gracious act also. And if we don't understand what this gracious act means, then I think we've lost this reading completely." Because one more time, he would start the next sentence with the phrase gracious act. So he would say something like, "For God has been gracious to us in Christ," or "God's gracious act in Christ." So I'm going to focus today then on graciousness, the gracious act of God, and what Paul is calling us to as he talks about the graciousness of God. So let me provide you the context of why Paul is talking about this. Now, the church in those days looked very different from what we see today. I mean, look at this building. Would you think the church is poor? Look at the Vatican. Would you think the church is poor? It gives the impression of tremendous amount of wealth. But the early Christian community was different. Remember, people were not lining up or queuing up to become Christians in those days. In fact, it was really the lowest class of society that initially joined Christianity. Because those who held offices, for example, in the Roman Empire, Christianity and being a government official just didn't go together because of emperor worship. So the church, in general, was poor. But the church in Jerusalem was particularly poor because the persecution had made people flee Jerusalem. And generally, who are the people who get left behind? Remember the storm that hit Katrina? New Orleans? Remember that? Who are the people who got left behind? The poor. Paul, knowing the situation of the church in Jerusalem, decided to take a collection from all the other communities so that the church and the poor in Jerusalem could be supported. The Corinthians had begun a collection, but a whole year had passed and the collection was not completed. Now, if you read the passage just before the passage we read, he talks about the Macedonian church who had been exemplary in the way their collection had been completed. So in today's reading, Paul is encouraging the Corinthian community, which excels in faith, in discourse, in knowledge, and earnestness, to excel in this gracious act also. Which means what? You guys started a collection. Now come on. Take care of those poor people. Take care of the church in Jerusalem. He's trying to rally them to support these people who need help. Now Paul does not end there. Even as he makes this appeal, he gives a theology for completing this gracious act. And see what he says. "For you know the gracious act of God," he says, "that though he was rich, for your sake he became poor, so that by his poverty you may become rich." And the Corinthians knew exactly what Paul was talking about. What God has done for them, they must now do to others in need. And that brings us to the gospel reading. You have two accounts of healing. And honestly, as I read the scriptures today, I wasn't too taken up by the stories of healing, stupendous as they are. But I'm more taken up with the graciousness of Christ. If you want to understand that graciousness, we have to read the passage before the passage we have today and a little after. Jesus had just completed two major healings, and the crowds were pressing upon him. He was on this side of the lake, and he gets to the other side of the lake because he wanted to get away from the crowd. Maybe he was hungry, maybe he was tired, maybe he wanted to take a break, but the crowd kept pressing. And guess what? Gets to the other side, someone says, "My daughter is dying." And Jesus said, "Dude, I know this is hard, but I gotta take a break. I need to get something to eat." No, he doesn't do that. See, it's in the small things that Jesus shows his graciousness. He goes, he's ready to go. And just when he's on the way, a woman comes along asking for healing. And Jesus, in the midst of all the tiredness, even as he's going towards another task, he stops. He calls her daughter. He doesn't say, "Couldn't you find better time? Oh, meet me later." Or he did what I would do, "Make an appointment with me." No. No. Jesus, at that point, offers her the help she needs. And when this little girl, when she's healed, Jesus could have stood there, you know, glorying in this healing. No, what does he say? "Give that little girl something to eat." See, in small things, you see the graciousness of Christ. He brings to completion the task of redemption that he starts. And of course, this task will be completed only on the cross later. But what Christ did on the cross became the climax of the graciousness of God. So what does this mean for us? That's the question. And I have three points that I'm going to very briefly offer in terms of my reflection for today. First of all, bringing our tasks to completion. Remember, Paul is writing to the Corinthians because for a year they have been trying to make this collection for the church in Jerusalem and they did not complete the task. For Paul, one area where graciousness can be practiced is at work. Now, if you go back home today, I'm sure you'll be able to look at something that you've been trying to complete and you just haven't gotten to it. I did it myself this morning. My fish tank needed cleaning for 6 months now. I decided before Mass, I'm going to get it done. I'm going to preach, right? So I might as well practice. You go home and you realize there's something that is being on your mind that must be done. And Paul is saying completing the work that you take upon yourself is an act of graciousness. So maybe you promised your wife that you would cook dinner one night and you never gotten to it. Or maybe you said to your husband, "I will take care of that closet, I'll clean that, leave it to me," and it's never happened. Or maybe you said to your parents, "I will get good grades," and you never got onto it. Or there was some task that needs to be completed at work and you told your boss, "I'll keep the deadline," and you did not. And Paul is saying it's about graciousness. When we accept responsibility for one another and complete our task, Paul says that is being like Christ. So he says, excel in the gracious act because that is what God has done. Jesus, it took the life out of him to bring the task of redemption to completion, but he did it. And we are being encouraged to do the same. First point. Secondly, folks, graciousness is not mentioned as a Christian virtue in the scriptures. You hear a lot of other virtues. For example, Paul in Galatians talks about love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, generosity, faithfulness, self-control. There are so many other virtues, but you never hear of graciousness being spoken of as a virtue. But I think It takes graciousness to practice the Christian virtues. And the more you practice the Christian virtues, the more gracious you become. So for example, it takes graciousness to smile at the person who flips you off because you're doing the speed limit. Happens to me all the time. I'm wondering, what did I do? So sometimes I smile, sometimes if they're looking at me, I make the sign of the cross and, you know, let them move on. It takes graciousness to stay quiet and let the truth speak for itself when people malign your name. It takes graciousness to be patient and faithful when things are not going our way. It takes graciousness to open our eyes to the needs of the people around the world. And thirdly, we must not forget that Paul is talking about financial resources. When he's talking about the poor in Jerusalem, he's not merely asking them to pray for them. He's saying, come on, get the collection going. Please send help because that is what they need. I think, at least I am, generally uncomfortable about talking about finances in the church. It's just part of my hang-up. And yet, we realize that it's part of our being together as a community. Now, the way I look at it, you know, I give a lot of time, I give a lot of my energy to people, but my financial contributions to the church and to the poor, for me, it's a concrete expression of what I feel in my heart. At least that's how I look at it. So when I get my tax statement, for example, it's in black and white for me. How generous was I? I'm really trying to be gracious today. You're fine. You're fine, Ryan. Take it easy. We can be a gracious community. So, for me, the financial resources and my contribution, when I see it's in black and white, I give a lot of time, I give a lot of energy, I give a lot of resources, but what's in black and white gives me it's only an indicator, of what my generosity, my love, my kindness is all about. Money's not everything, is it? Yet money can prove character. The way we handle our finances tells us one way of telling us who we are. So today, for example, we have Teresa Phillips who's sitting here right in front. And one of the things that she's going to talk to us for about 5 minutes after communion is about the church in Africa and the missionaries who help there. She's here on behalf of the Africa Faith and Justice Network. Why should she be worried about this? Why should she be engaged in this task? Why should we be involved? And I think the answer to all of that is the graciousness of God. We have what we have, Paul says, because of the graciousness of God. And here is somebody asking us today if we could be as gracious to the church around the world like God has been to us. At the end of Mass, a few people will be standing with little baskets in their hand. And I'm not asking you to, you know, put a lot of money in there. That's not the point. The point is, no matter what you give, make sure it comes from the graciousness of God that you've experienced. If you can show to them that we care, then we are being like God. Very soon, the bread and wine will be brought and put on this altar for us. And we ask ourselves, why do we have that bread and wine? Because God is gracious. Why does that bread and wine become life-giving for us? Because God is gracious. And we who receive the graciousness of God, may we in turn be gracious to those in need. The people of God said,